Welcome back to The Drive, Lever Sage, Matt Connors Vita, Cam Clement, and Styx. I like more of the 80s Styx.
Little Mr. Roboto.
Yeah. Double Origato. Mr. Roboto.
Domo.
Yeah.
Robo.
Here's what you need to know. And there's a lot, actually. Let's start on TSN 1200 tonight, 7:30 the pregame, 8:30 the tip-off, game number 4 of the NBA Finals. The Denver Nuggets looking to take a 3-1 series lead over the Miami Heat. We'll have full coverage for you here on TSN 1200. RBC Canadian Open, and Carl Juan leads at 9 under par after shooting a 5 under 67. He has a 2-stroke lead on a number of golfers, 5, in fact, at 7 under. Corey Connors is 6 under par on his 11th hole of the day. We did tell you a little bit earlier that the front 9 and the back 9, they're playing a little different.
Plus 325 on the front, minus 249 on the back.
That would be a little different.
Just a little different.
600 strokes. Yeah. Through almost 2 rounds. Will Bateman, the Canadian, round of the day, 66. And he is 4 under par. Adam Hadwin is 5 under par. So you have a number of Canadians here within striking distance. Taylor Pendrith shot a even par round of 72. He's 3 under. And Rory McIlroy is on the course right now. I believe he's on 12. He's also 3 under par. We'll keep you updated as the show goes along. Novak Djokovic and Casper Ruud, your final in the French Open, as both won their semis today. Djokovic over the number 1 seed Alcaraz, and Ruud over Zverev. Ruud won in straight sets. Djokovic took 4, but
what an entertaining second set.
Really entertaining.
The one that he lost to Alcaraz. I watched the last, I think Alcaraz had like, he had triple break point to win the set, and Djokovic came back and won 5 straight points. Like, all right, now it's 15-40, 30-40, deuce, advantage. Oh, it's over.
That can break you.
And and it didn't, because Alcaraz came back, won on serve, and then broke Joker, I think, to win the set. Mm. But, man, some of those points, and like Djokovic even on a few of them was like, all right, like, yeah. You got me. I thought I had you, but no, you got me. And, man, Alcaraz is fun to watch.
CFL tonight, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers host the Hamilton Tiger Cats at 8:30. And tomorrow, our coverage of the Alouettes and the Red Blacks starts at 5:30 with the countdown to kickoff. 7 o'clock, AJ Jakubek, Jeff Avery in Montreal with the call. Game number 1. For the Red Blacks. According to some reports, Steve Apostolopoulos withdrawn from the bidding process for the Ottawa Senators sale. Wish we could tell you what is happening as opposed to what's not happening, but that is the latest that we do know there. And the Toronto Blue Jays, Cam, hosting the Minnesota Twins. They won the season series after beating the Houston Astros 3 of 4 games this week. And I think at the end of the season, if you look back and go, we won the season series against the Astros, you'll feel pretty good about yourself. Right now, unfortunately, a lot of the news with the Jays being taken over by Anthony Bass, who has just been in the middle of way too much, came out and spoke to the media. Did a pretty poor job explaining himself as to why he...
The lesson learned that we heard from Anthony Bass yesterday was discouraging, to say the least, where I'm paraphrasing, but he said, I've learned not to share my personal beliefs online.
Right.
And when that's the lesson that you've learned from all of this, it's discouraging, to say the least.
So he shared a post on social media that called for anti-LGB TQLA and boycotts of Target and Bud Light, shared the post of the sale of the merchandise as evil and demonic. And then had a chance to explain himself. Didn't do a very good job. The Jays also, as an organization, did not do a very good job at, he was going to go out and catch the ceremonial first pitch for Pride Night, which was not a very good decision by the organization whatsoever, regardless of what he said to the media or didn't say or should have been more apologetic. But now they have designated him for assignment, and he is off the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll see if he ever gets back to the Toronto Blue Jays. Feels like the right thing has been done with him right now, because number one, he wasn't a very effective pitcher, and number two, he was making a lot of this about himself, and he couldn't get out of his own way. And he needed to be a lot more understanding of what's happening in our world right now and being a part of the growth of everybody. And in fact, he was doing the opposite.
And I don't follow the Jays nearly as closely as the two of you gentlemen, but it's not like he's lighting the world on fire on the field this year either.
No.
And so you add all of this and you add to the fact that he hasn't been all that effective on the field. It feels like this is a decision the Blue Jays could and should have maybe come to a few days ago. And the whole thing from, I think, all angles on the Blue Jays front is very much an exercise in how not to handle something. From Anthony Bass, from Ross Atkins, from the organization as a whole. It's just been a bit of a mess.
Cam, you're a big Blue Jays fan. What do you think about all this?
Yeah, it's definitely not a good look on the organization. I thought up until that misjudgment of having him catch the ceremonial first pitch today, I thought they handled it pretty well. Ross Atkins came out, John Schneider came out, and both of them were kind of vehemently in disagreement of his decision and talked about how he better learn from this if he has any chance of remaining with the club. And I think overall, you look in sports, Mark Stahl on the biggest stage right now with the Panthers. Talent, I think, like for example, if he was pitching well right now, would he still be on the team? I do absolutely believe that. The bullpen has really steadied, and with the emergence of Nate Pearson now, I mean, he's way down that pecking order. So to just remove that distraction when you're looking at a middle reliever and not even a guy that you would feel comfortable putting in high leverage right now, it's best just to remove the distraction. The team's playing good baseball right now. Let's focus on that, and let's try to move on from this the best we can and kind of celebrate all walks of life this weekend at the Rogers Center.
Well, that's it, right? Like, how are you not able to put your personal beliefs aside for the betterment of the team, the city, the country, and those from all walks of life? Like, I just don't understand. And I agree with you, Cam. I think the Blue Jays, other than deciding that, I think they thought he was going to be a little bit more remorseful and he understood the gravity of what he did. And you're all for second chances if somebody wants to learn and someone wants to listen and wants to think that they don't know everything. I'm going to hope that that's where the concept came from to put him out catching that ceremonial first pitch, because he was somebody that was going to understand what happened and then be a leader the other way. But as soon as he spoke, you're like, no, this is just wrong.
Well, it also, like, and I think that's where it's so disappointing. The organization should have known how he felt before they made that decision and before he spoke to the media. And they should be having those conversations.
Yep.
And if that's how he feels, and like...
But I think they did. Ross Atkins spoke to, when they talked to him,
mm-hmm.
I think he came across a little bit more remorseful. And then he got in front of the media, and he didn't.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it's one of those, and feelings on this, unfortunately, in my opinion, are so divided, and I don't understand why they are. I don't understand one side of this argument at all. But we're seeing it, like, we're seeing MPPs, an Ontario MPP, Joel Harden, got punched in the face today at an pro and anti-LGBTQ plus protest. And he said today, I'll take a punch for queer and trans youth any day. And we're seeing it here in Canada. We're seeing it in the States. We're seeing clashes. Was it in California earlier this week?
Yeah, okay.
And it's happening everywhere. And I don't understand it personally, but people have their beliefs. And it's one of those things where these days people are more and more entrenched. And I think that's what we're seeing with Anthony Bass is he's entrenched in his beliefs and he's entitled to believe what he wants to believe, whether I understand or agree. And I do not agree personally at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a complicated thing when it comes to sports because people have their religious beliefs and whether I believe their beliefs are bigoted or not, beliefs are beliefs. It's a really, really tricky, slippery slope. And unfortunately, we're seeing it play out in all facets across Canada and the U.S. right now.
Yeah, I don't disagree that people are entitled to their own opinions, but then organizations are entitled to do what they want as well.
Could not agree more.
So you want to be that person to make sure that your beliefs are heard? Okay, go for it. But organizations also have the ability to do what they want. And if Anthony Bass isn't going to pitch anymore, I don't want that guy pitching for a team I cheer for. I don't. Because he had a chance. Like, he screwed up, and then it was like, okay, we all get the people screw up. But do you understand that you screwed up? And if the answer is no, okay, well, then you're just not going to pitch for us. You're not going to play for us, and that's the way it's going to be. I don't feel bad for Anthony Bass whatsoever. And I think I would feel this way. Like, I agree with you, Cam. Unfortunately, the way our world works is if he was their best pitcher, he'd probably still be pitching for them. And they would just keep him away from the media and not let him talk. But that's the way our world works sometimes.
His play on the field has made this an even easier decision for the organization.
Yeah. We'll take a break. Because when we come back, I'd call him one of our favorites, but we'll see after the interview's over. JP Bolduc, one of my absolute favorite players in Red Blacks history, is going to come on. But he's now the color voice en français of the Montreal Alouettes. Has he changed allegiances with his time here in Ottawa? Anyway, we'll find out. And we'll find out a little bit more about the game tomorrow night between Ottawa and Montreal. 5:30, countdown to kickoff. 7 p.m., the kickoff, the opening night of the season for the Ottawa Red Blacks in Montreal. Can't wait for it. We'll talk to former Red Black, now one of the voices of the Montreal Alouettes, JP Bolduc, when we come back in the drive on TSN 1200. Welcome back to the drive, Lieber Sage, Matt Conisvita, Cam Clement. Took a little bit longer there to get back from commercial. We let it breathe a little bit longer. I think because Cam, producing today, was just trying like anything to find one highlight of JP Bolduc. Couldn't find one.
They were all highlights with JP.
Yeah, couldn't find anything. And just, okay, guys, you got to start talking now.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, JP Bolduc, and I said before you got on, you can go back and check the tape. One of my absolute favorite Red Blacks of all time.
Oh, come on. That's so nice of you. Thank you.
But I also said, like, have you switched allegiances? We don't know. Because we welcome JP Bolduc, former Red Black, now voice of the Montreal Alouettes in Montreal on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. I wanted to officially introduce you that way. Like, have you completely switched allegiances? You're going to tell us that Cody Fajardo is going to go 18-0 this year or what?
Maybe not 18-0, but more so 15-3, something like that.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe they'll lose a few games to the Red Blacks, and, you know, I won't be that sad.
See, there you go. Red Blacks beat the Alouettes, but then the Alouettes win all their other games, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so we appreciate your time. We're going to talk about the game, but let's talk about your journey and, you know, leaving football and going back to Montreal. We've had you on. You're a bit of an analyst. I thought you'd come on and say, thank you very much, Lee, for, you know, everything you've done to get me back into radio. I haven't heard that yet, but you are the voice now of the Montreal Alouettes, doing color on all of their broadcasts en français.
Yes, in French, and my mother tongue, my first language. Also my first love. My dad was a season ticket holder for years at the Alouettes, so I grew up going to the games and knowing all the players' names. Even I knew the special team player's name back then, so then I sold some peanuts and some soft drinks in the stands, and then moved on to play in the CFL for a few years, and now I'm back at Percival Molson almost every week doing the radio for them. So it's I've kind of been around the league. I mean, I've been on the PA as well. I've been a lot of places in this league, so it's fun for me now.
So for you to get this job again, does it feel full circle? Like coming back, playing, leaving, you're now in Montreal, you're working. You told me that, you know, your newborn is like the greatest newborn in the world, never cries, never does anything, and now we hear it cry like 10 seconds into the interview. But, no, look, you got a great life going on in Montreal, and then you're offered this. Is it a full circle moment for you?
It was special for me to get it's not a full time, but a full season radio gig. It was full circle, and we've talked about it a few times, Lee. My dad come in from radio. He worked in radio his whole life. I kind of grew up around the offices of Mix 96, AGD, and Show Me FM in Montreal. I knew all the guys and Rick Moffat and all these guys. But for me to get a gig and it's special, especially for the Alouettes, the CFL in Montreal. It's a little bit special for me and my family. So and I'm having a great coach. My dad calls me like almost after every game. Oh, you have to say this and that. You forgot to say this. Don't do this. Don't do that. I'm like, okay, come on. You were let go of on air because you weren't so good. So come on, man. Give me a break.
Okay, tell people who your dad was, because your dad was very influential in the radio business.
Yeah, my dad was a general sales manager for 26 years at Standard Radio, who became Corus, who became Bell Media, but now he's newly retired the last few months. So now he retired, but he was in the radio for almost 35 years. And he was a morning man in Amqui and in Quebec, but I was in the 70s. I was not even in the plans of existing.
Well, I think that's awesome. First of all, congratulations on getting the gig. You're going to be great at it. Like, you love the game, and you love the people around the game. And I think that's really important, especially for the Canadian Football League, to have that perspective. So let's ask you about a bunch of stuff. Number one, Bob Dice named the new permanent head coach of the Ottawa Redblacks. You played for him, and I haven't heard a lot of guys not go out of their way to make sure that JP Bob Dice's first, second, and third when they mention who they love playing for. What was it like playing for Bob Dice? Do you think he's the right guy in Ottawa?
It was about time to name him. You know, Bob Dice has been the guy who's been for 20-some years in the CFL, so he knows the in and out of this league. He's been around some great coaches. And he, in my opinion, as a great player, you know, you see younger players looking after established veterans. It's the same thing for coaches. Oh, you know, they've been around very good OCs, very good head coaches. He worked for Rick Campbell. He worked for some other coaches. Won a Grey Cup in Saskatchewan in 2013. So he's been around. He, you know, probably taking some notes from what he liked from the coaches, what he didn't like about other head coaches. And he's at a point in his life and career. Because, you know, he has a family, and, you know, you want to be at a good place. You want to be the best version of yourself for your family and your players and your team. And he's probably in a place in his life where he's very committed to the team, and he's also a very good coach. You know, as you said, probably up there 1, 2, 3, or, you know, 2, 3, 1, or as one of the most influential coaches I had in my career.
So why do players want to play for him?
Oh, for sure. Because he's a guy who leads by example. You know, he goes about his business. He's very, you know, within the walls of the stadium, within the white line. He's very professional. He always gives the best he can do. You know, he always gives the best that he can offer the players. And that's what you want the players to do for the team or for the coaches. So he's none of a big, very, very big talker. I know he talks a lot for no reason. He's a guy that leads the example. And at a pro level, in my opinion, he's someone who respects the players. He's very polite with the players. He coaches very well. And at a certain age, you know, we're all grown up, 30-some years old with families and kids, mortgages and all that stuff. So we're not teenagers, you know, and he gets a good grasp of that. And he's being very polite and he's very respectful toward players in a tough business. You know, there's a lot of players moving to CFL, and within that, he's able to navigate and being very professional. So that's something that I always appreciate. And all the players that have been cut by him still appreciate today.
Yeah, what a trait that is. I always loved the line that he had last year when he said, look, I don't have a lot of rules for my players, but I have very high standards. And I thought that was very, that hit home, I think, with a lot of guys. And I'm sure, you know, when you play for him, okay, he's not going to babysit you, but he expects you to be at a certain level.
It is exactly what it is. You know, he's nothing about babysitting. All, you know, we just always talked about the curfew. I know he doesn't care about the curfew. You go to bed at the time that you want, but you better perform the next day. So,
JP Bolduc joining us, former Red Black, now voice of the Alouettes in French, getting ready to do the game coming up tomorrow night with the Montreal Alouettes and the Ottawa Red Blacks. Before we move on to Montreal, I do have to get your thoughts on not one but two hires out of Montreal, Kahari Jones and Baron Miles, the new coordinators here in Ottawa, and you'd be pretty familiar with them, both coming from Montreal, and both, I think, JP, in some extenuating circumstances with what was happening going on with the Alouettes. They were putting in, especially Kahari Jones as the head coach, he was put in a tough spot, probably deserved a little bit better. But now both of those guys are the coordinators here in Ottawa.
Yeah, I think they're in a good spot. I think they both have a really good relationship with Coach Dice. You know, trust is it goes a long way in this kind of business. And they did really well. They both did really well and with not a lot of means in Montreal. Let's be honest, at that time, we had an owner that was not in the city, not very involved. COVID and all that stuff. So, but they did a really good job with not a lot of resources in Montreal, and now they're in a place, I think, where they're a little bit more comfortable with a little bit more of a bag of resources. So, looking forward to see them coach and have the strategies they're really good at.
Okay, so tell us about the Montreal Alouettes. I don't think right now they have a lot of not a lot of people around the league go, oh, you know who's going to be good? Montreal. But they've gone through some change as well. Kind of describe what they've done here in the offseason, and, you know, starts with the quarterback, Cody Fajardo.
You know, I think if we go back in January, I think the Alouettes really want Trevor Harris back with the kind of season he had. He brought them to the East Final, the most success they had in the last few years. But I understand the point of view for Trevor. Trevor was offered almost the same contract as Saskatchewan, but with a big signing bonus, which the Alouettes at that time didn't have any owners. You know, the league was the owners of the team, and they didn't have much budgets for signing bonuses until Pierre Carpello, the new owner, came in. So I think with this situation happening, I think they were very fortunate to get Cody Fajardo, a healthy Cody Fajardo, and someone that knows Coach Moss, and the best Cody Fajardo version that we've seen in the CFL is when he played with a chip on his shoulder. Now, remember him in 2019, nobody thought that he would do good when Colorado went down in Hamilton, and he was very, very good. And that's the kind of that's the kind of Cody Fajardo that the Alouettes need this year and wants to have. And I think Cody is a point in his career. It's, I'm not going to say now or never, but, you know, if he's not doing good this year, he won't be ready to start again. But the way he's been, because I went to the training camp a few times, and the way he's been playing and behaving, looking really good. He's looking like he's going to be the version of 2019. Hopefully he stays healthy. But if this happens, I think the Iowa's going to be a very good team in the East this year.
Tell us about the coaching staff. Jason Moss, you mentioned. Noel Thorpe's a name that people would recognize here from Ottawa. Of course, Anthony Calvillo as well. So what does their coaching staff look like?
A matured version of Jason Moss. Jason Moss was a very good OC in Ottawa in 2015, then moved on to be a head coach in Edmonton, sorry, 2016. Had a very nice nice run down there, but from what I heard from really good friends, he was good. He was a bit too emotive. He was too young, very, very reactive. He looked like someone that was a lot more in control. You go back now, he's older. He's been on another team as an OC with Saskatchewan and bigger markets. So he's looking like someone who's really in control. And something that I'm happy with for him is he played in Montreal years ago. He was the backup quarterback for the Alouettes. So he knows the market. He knows how it goes in Montreal, that the Alouettes, if they win, they will have people in the stands and they will have success selling tickets. It's like that for the soccer team. It's like that for the hockey team. In Montreal, if you don't win, it's tough to sell tickets in any sports. So, I think we see a version of Jason Moss who's in control with a coaching staff that's a little bit more experienced than what he had in Edmonton.
JP Bolduc, former Ottawa Red Black, now one of the voices of the Montreal Alouettes, joining us here on The Drive, previewing tomorrow. You made a good point to me when we spoke earlier just about sports in Montreal and the ownership of the teams. Maybe in as good of a place as it's been in a while, JP?
For sure. For me, being a French Canadian in Montreal, my wife being half Italian, half Irish, to see the Habs being owned by an Irish bilingual family in Montreal as the Molsons, and then you look at the soccer team, the CF Montreal call now, owned by a very wealthy Italian immigrant family from the early 1900s from Montreal, and then now the Saputo, now you look at Pierre Pelado, who's the chairman of Quebecor World, a very big media company in Quebec, or across Canada, he owns Vidéotron and all that stuff. It's very a powerful man who I think bought the team for the right reason, and now you see a French-Canadian billionaire who wants to, give back to the city of Montreal by buying one of the best franchises in the history of the CFL.
Well, he must be a billionaire if they have JP Bolduc on the broadcast now. that would be a lot of money. Just a couple of thoughts across the league as we go into it. What do you think of some of the teams? The quarterback position in general, to me, seems to be a little bit weaker than it's been in years past. Is that a fair statement?
I would agree with you. I remember a few years ago when you had, Matt Nichols full go in Winnipeg, and Mike Riley and Lee Bolivai in Calgary, and Ricky Ray in Toronto, and Masoli and his prime in Hamilton. You go back and you look at today, I would agree with you. A lot younger guys with a lot less experience.
So tomorrow night, Red Blacks, Alouettes. What can we expect? I know they've made some adjustments to the stadium, which is nice, in Montreal. Are you expecting a big crowd?
I would expect it's a very nice summer day in Montreal. It's not too hot, not too cold. We're going to see a very physical team. Let's not forget the Alouettes have Will Stanback in the backfield. So I think we're going to see some very nice old-school smash-mouth football with a very nice summer day in Montreal.
I got to ask you about this, too. So I don't really care. I actually argued with AJ the other day about the top 50 list of TSN and the top 50 players in the league. I don't really care. Now, I don't know if the players care. You can tell me more about that, whether they would or they wouldn't. But it's hard not to notice that William Stanback was the only Montreal Alouette in the top 50. There's only 9 teams in the league. So that's Would that sit poorly with other players and maybe a chance to rally together to, like, we'll show them as a team who we are?
Maybe. When I was playing, I was always upset that I wasn't in the top 10 every year.
You were so close, you know. Though. So close.
But, no, I think it does rub some players not in a good way. But I look at the roster of the Alouettes. I mean, some of, like, you know, I just think about Avery Williams, who's a dominant force with the Red Blacks, but the Red Blacks didn't have much success. So it probably impacts his ranking. But for the Alouettes, they only have one player. I'm not sure this is perfectly is really good. But if the players were voting, maybe it would be a little bit more accurate. But, you know, I think it's the media who is voting, and some of these guys don't know maybe enough about football that they should. So, yeah, but I remember in the locker room, some guys were upset, and some guys were very happy about their ranking.
You realize you're part of the media now, right? So when you say those guys don't know very much, you're part of that group now?
Yeah, me, I'm the guy in the media now that knows much about football, but that doesn't know anything about media. So I'm the bad guy now.
Exactly. JP, congratulations on the gig. We look forward to talking to you, especially when you come a couple of times. They play four times, the Red Blacks and the Alouettes. So Montreal will be here twice. Ottawa will be in Montreal twice. But have fun with the season, and we'll definitely talk to you as the season goes along.
Thank you very much, Lee. It was fun talking to you.
JP Bolduc, voice of the Montreal Alouettes on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. Montreal doesn't come here until August 19th. First game for the Alouettes. I don't know. One player in the top 50?
That seems a bit off.
Well, no, that to me is great for the team.
Right.
Like, if I'm the coach.
And the old nobody believes in us.
Hey, guys, look at this list. I believe in you, but they don't. Right?
Some built-in motivation.
I don't want 10 of my guys on that list bragging about who's number 11 and who's number 18.
Do you think they start calling each other by their numbers instead of their names? Yeah. Hey, 12. You going to be good tonight?
Well, you know what?
Shut up, 14.
I'm two spots better than you. Although I did make a comment yesterday about Dominique Rimes being number 11. It took him about 4 minutes to catch his first touchdown pass. Caught another touchdown pass last night in a BC victory. He got off to a nice start.
Pretty good.
Yeah, he got off to a nice start. Good. You know what didn't look good, too, before I get off this subject? The crowd. My God. Anyway, AJ brought this up. I agree with him. What they're doing, not making a big deal of the Grey Cup champions opening up the season and making a big deal about it. Hey, I got a good idea. Let's just open up the season in Calgary for two straight years and watch about 19 people in the stands watch a football game. What are they doing? Seriously. I was embarrassed. Again. Why they start these seasons in Calgary. But you know what's going to get me in a better mood? Tell you about the Edmonton Elks. Guaranteed win night when we come back on the drive on TSN 1200. Always good to come back with the theme song for Kenny Omega. Welcome back to the drive here on TSN 1200. I know that's why you did it, Cam. Canada's greatest wrestlers. Is that not why you did it? No. You didn't even know that. Did you?
Had no idea.
Yeah.
I always think of Guitar Hero when I hear this song.
Well, think of Kenny Omega from now on.
Probably not.
Why not?
Because the odds of me thinking of Kenny Omega ever.
I'll drill it into your head, and you will the next 2 weeks, because Forbidden Door is coming up in 15 days from now, and it's in Toronto, and Kenny Omega is going to face Will Ospreay in maybe the greatest wrestling match that will ever happen.
Will Ospreay is the one who was pulling a bit of an Iron Sheik. And like Iron Sheik would be like America. And well, Ospreay's been, you know, throwing some smack at Canada, yeah. Right?
Well, he's a Australian guy that is one of, if not the best wrestler in the world.
Part of the Commonwealth, though.
Wrestles, though, in Japan full time and is coming over simply for this show. That's why it's called Forbidden Door. You're wrestling people that you're not supposed to wrestle from other companies. And So, yeah, he's going to come over and face Kenny Omega. They faced off one time before. They're actually going to face off for the New Japan U.S. title, which sounds, yeah.
I'm not going to remember any of this. I will remember the name Kenny Omega.
You will, because in the next 2 weeks, Matt, I'm going to bring it up like every day.
Is Kenny Omega Bruce Boudreaux's favorite? Or is that somebody completely
different?
That's
Kevin
Owens. Kevin Owens.
Yeah. Who's also
same initials.
Also Canadian.
Right. Same initials. Also Canadian. Yeah. So I'm not as out to lunch as I could be.
They're a little bit different. Kenny Omega. And
I have no idea.
Kevin Owens.
About any of that stuff. Are you slacking this week? Only one episode of This Is Wrestling this week. Is that correct?
Yeah. And that's because over the next 2 weeks, you're going to be busy. You're going to be busy, busy, busy.
I love it.
Well, we're going to get This Is Wrestling, the podcast. We're going down the Forbidden Door. We're going to do some episodes, I believe, on the road. Like, things are going to be
outstanding.
Yeah, things are going to be busy.
Well, as long as LVGA keeps sending them my way, I will continue to oppose them. LVJ being Lever Sage Jr., Zach Rise or Rawls McGibbon.
Yep. Down in Belleville right now, Zach. Wanted to bring up a couple things. I mentioned the Elks, guaranteed win night on Sunday. They're going to open up their season against Trevor Harris and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So if you buy a ticket to the Edmonton Elks game on Sunday,
they're guaranteeing a win.
They are guaranteeing a win.
A home win. When was the last time they won at Homely?
2019.
Is that recent?
Nope.
Well, that's
my calendar says 4 years ago. But they didn't play for a season, so I'll give them that.
I just use my fingers. Your math adds up.
Yeah. So it's guaranteed win night for a team that hasn't won a home game in
four calendar years.
But let's say they don't win. Like, a miraculous effort by Trevor Harris somehow beats the Elks in guaranteed win night. If you bought a ticket and they don't win, you get that same seat for the next game for free. And if they don't win that game, guess what? It continues to roll over, and you'll be going to games for free until they win. Now, I don't know if this is a great strategy. It's either a really unbelievable strategy to get people to continue to go to your games even while you're losing, or you just win the first game, everyone's happy because you finally won a game, especially on guaranteed win night, and then the season starts to take off. How do we feel about guaranteed win night for the Elks coming up this weekend? And if you don't win, that ticket continues to roll over. So theoretically, you could go to all nine games for
the price of one.
Price of one.
I do appreciate how much they're doubling down on this. Like, it's easy to do a single guaranteed win night, but to make it a rolling guaranteed win night is a bold strategy. And I think it speaks to, and we've had Farhan Lalji on the station on Tuesday. He joined AJ and myself when you were on the road.
I was listening
to head out to Buster's in Kanata.
Intently. When he started talking soccer after, I might have turned the channel.
But Farhan was talking about how bleak attendance has been in Edmonton and said, like, look, I'm not pandering to the audience that I'm speaking to here, but what the Red Blacks fans have done, in spite of the futility of the team on home field, has been really impressive when you compare it to Edmonton. And this tells me that the people running the Elks know that if their team doesn't win at home, they're not going to draw. And this is their compromise, their solution to try and make sure there are fans in the stands. And I think whether it's a smart business decision or not, I mean, you're going to be making some money on concessions, I guess, even if you aren't making money on ticket sales. And that's got to be a big factor in them making this decision. But it tells me they don't have a lot of faith that there are going to be a lot of fans if this team continues to lose at home.
Do you think the Red Blacks are feeling the heat now even more so if this catches on and they don't start racking up some wins at home, that they might be forced to follow suit here?
I don't think so, because I think the Red Blacks really do believe a lot in themselves. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to go out and win games, and if they start losing, that momentum can creep up in a hurry. But I really think that they believe that. Nate Behar was interesting to listen to yesterday, because he was like, in the years past, we've kind of talked about, oh, we got to get off to a good start, and we, you know, we got to win a couple of home games, and they've talked about it in the locker room. And he said this year, like, not at all. Like, it's just a completely different belief system that they almost know that they're going to be competitive and they're going to be good. So they're not worried about it. They don't talk about it.
Yeah. It's less about proving it to themselves and talking themselves into it versus, like, we don't need to prove anything. We're going to show the rest of the East, was what Nate said yesterday.
Yep.
We are just ready to show the rest of the CFL East that they got to come through Ottawa this year.
So I think they believe it. Now, again, they can believe it all they want. They start 0-2 or 0-3 at home. It
becomes a story again.
Well, every question will be about it, and then they'll be continued to be asked about it, and then they'll get mad, and then maybe they'll do something about it. I don't know. But the one worry I would have in Edmonton, and you hope that this doesn't happen, and I'm with you, Matt, I kind of understand and don't mind the fact that they're really sinking their teeth into it, going, you know what, we're going to win a game. We're going to win a game soon, so we're not worried about it. And if we do get a couple of people back for game number two that wouldn't have otherwise come, but they're coming for free, then fine. Where this can get dangerous is if you start 0-3 at home and those same people are coming back and they're not cheering your team anymore. In fact, they're booing your team. They might even start cheering for the other team, because if I'm an Elks, if I buy a ticket, if I'm in Edmonton, okay, like, I'm going to go to the game and hope you win the first one. But if you don't win the first one and you don't win the second one,
let's keep it rolling, baby.
Yeah, like, I get to go to all these games. You can start to have people cheer against your team and boo your own team. Now, they haven't won a game in 4 years at home, so they might be booing anyway, but I wouldn't want to start.
The booing is one thing, but the cheering against is very different. And, like, you think back to Buffalo, Arizona, when the Sabres fans were cheering for a Coyotes goal.
Right. And, so that they could finish lower.
And that's what you really, really, really don't want to see. Booing your own team is, like, you never want to see it, but it shows that your fans care. It's when they're actively cheering against your team that is like, okay, we've lost the plot.
Because if they get something for your team losing, a free ticket to the next game and the next game, maybe they start the other way. We'll take a break, come back with the final hour of the drive here on TSN 1200.